Today is March 4th, 2024, and unfortunately, once again, we have to begin. We lost another soul yesterday in battle. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim b'tzara b'shivya amdim bein b'yam bein b'yabasha bein v'avir hamakom yirachem aleihem yotziyei mitzara levacha me'afela li'ora mishibet l'gula hashto ba'agala u'bizman kariv v'noma amein. And for all those that keep on asking the burning issue now, the Haredim, the draft, I can only say yesterday was a day of great Atmos Nefesh, and the Peleg, what they call from Yerushalayim, if they have any understanding of what Torah is about, it's if they have any belief in God, that there's a God in the world, that a Holocaust happened, that there's a state of Israel, it's purely coincidental. It hurts so much what went on yesterday and the signs they held up that are in all today's newspapers. The word Chilul Hashem is not strong enough to describe their activity. But what can I do? I preach to the choir, and I hope the choir perhaps has more influence than I do. Now, yesterday's shiur, I thanked the medical doctors who complimented me on the shiur, but my knowledge is simply an outsider looking in, and on the issue that we dealt with yesterday, there's, I would say, unanimous opinion that the child can heal the father, doctor, dentist, nurse. The Chabala is not a Chabala. It's V'yathafta L'Reyecha Kamocha. It's an open Gemara. The addendum I mentioned that when it comes to an operation and when something can go very wrong and there can be trauma, and there medical ethics calls for the child to abstain. I think that would be a psak that's accepted by everyone. As I showed you yesterday, the Minchat Yitzchak, and attributed to Reb Moshe Feinstein, everyone is in total agreement. Now, as I said, there's more to the tshuva that I have to deal with next week, and I have to touch upon the second question he asked, which leads us into the real world of human relations, but leave that for next Sunday. Regarding today's shiur, it's very basic, very important, and it gives us understanding of what happened in the Litvashi yeshiva world. Unfortunately, at least I say unfortunately, it became a tradition that when students made up their mind, they, like you saw yesterday, blocked highways and shouted slogans that are very offensive and depressing. And it all goes back to the bitter fight we saw last week between Rabbi Yehoshua Heschel challenging the Netziv. Now I'll come back to it in a moment and go further, but I just want to mention that we got involved with the question of Rosh Yeshiva opening up mail and reading private correspondence. So a Talmud, I heard this story. There's a famous story about Reb Chaim Volozhiner where he calls in a married Talmud and tells him that a letter arrived to inform him that his wife just gave birth. The Talmud thanks him for the information and asks, which one of my wives had the baby? Reb Chaim looks at him and says, what, you never heard of the Cherem, the Rabbeinu Geshem? And the Talmud answers to Reb Chaim, and you opened my mail, you never heard of the Cherem Rabbeinu Geshem. Now, Elimelech Meisels, who sent me this, thinks it's not apocryphal. I always thought it was apocryphal, but we can't prove it either way. But it's a good Litvisha joke if it is apocryphal. If it really happened, it shows the sharpness of the Talmud Rebbe Litvish. My brother, Dr. Levi Rothkopf, sent to me information. Unfortunately, I was correct Rachel, the wife of Rav Yisrael Abed Sitrin, who was the second rabbi of Petach Tikva, perished in the Holocaust. What I heard is that she went back because her father had died, and she went back to arrange to collect his writings, to photograph, to get it back to Israel, or Palestine at the time, and she was caught in the war and perished. Chana was the second daughter, Esha Tarav Abed David Goldfeind, Rav in Moscow, and of course she also perished in the Holocaust with her children. Commenting on the news, everyone is stunned with the $1 billion gift to Albert Einstein Medical School by Ruth Gottesman. A lot of people have said to me, imagine had this money come in 10 years ago, why you would have never given up the medical school. I said, no, I also, first thing I thought about, but I just want to mention about the Gottesman family, three people. If you go back with the Shurim 20 years ago, perhaps. So I spoke about the three wealthy individuals who built Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, going back 100 years. And it was the Fischel, Gottesman, and Lampert families. What's interesting is what remains of the families 100 years later. And the Fischel family, via his son-in-law, Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, all the descendants from that family, Hashem Torah and Mitzvot, a good deal of them live in Israel. I've taught many members of the family, including in the Kollel. When you come to the Gottesman family, among his descendants are my own students listening to this very shiur. A good deal of the family lives in Israel, but not everyone is from. There are many Gottesmans who are originally, 100 years ago, they were all Kohanim. So as one member of the family said to me, not everyone can say Birchat Kohanim. I don't want to elaborate. The Lampert family, see, what happened with that family was a good deal of the family followed Mordechai Kaplan and broke with Torah and the Jewish Center. But not all is lost. I've met members of the family. I once gave a lecture and I didn't speak too highly of Mordechai Kaplan. And they told me that their grandparents were among his followers. But they came back, Shomer Torah Mitzvot. So it's fascinating with the yeshiva, these three individuals, and here is a lady who married into the Gottesman family. And if you recall what I told you about Irwin Shapiro offering me a 2-year fellowship to study with Warren Buffett, her husband is considered the greatest Talmud of Warren Buffett. And he's a billionaire many times over from mastering Warren Buffett's technique. So Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva, at least a subdivision, because there still is a connection with Montefiore, the yeshiva has benefited from Warren Buffett. And if I understand correctly, she gave the donation, but it's also contingent that they will continue being Shemesh Shabbos, the cafeteria kosher, and all the agreements that were made with YU 10 years ago will continue. So this is to this lady's credit. Now, regarding what I spoke about last week, Louis Jacobs, so I want to make a correction. Nachum Lem, who knows, he's a walking encyclopedia. I mentioned that Louis Jacobs, they considered him conservative, historical school. And I can tell you as descendants, totally Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Torah Mitzvot. But it wasn't that he didn't become chief rabbi. It was that he didn't become principal of Jews College. And he wasn't in line to receive Rabbi Hertz. He was too young. But he was in line to become principal of Jews College when Rabbi Brody was chief rabbi. and Rabbi Brody refused to appoint him. There was something with an expectation that the principal of Juice College was in line to be chief rabbi, as in fact Rabbi Sachs was. And regarding what I told you about the scandal in Yeshiva in 1935, Shelly Sapphire, his original name was Sapphire. He changed his name after the scandal from Sapphire to Sapphire. So, like, I don't know if that's like in Russia, when you went bankrupt under the Tsar, you had to change your name. What's the prime example? What's your first name?
Yaakov.
What's the prime example? The son of Rabbi Yitzchokhan Inspector, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Rabinovitz. No one understands that's his son, but he was sick and tired of all the Akmas Nefesh his father had in the rabbinate. So he decided to be a businessman, and if Rakefet would have been a businessman, and my wife says, why couldn't you go with Buffett? Look what she gave. And I told her, yeah, I would have gone bankrupt. You got to have a chush for what you can do. So he went in, and then when he started out all over, he had to change his name. He took his mother's maiden name, Rabinovich. Now, my parents both remember that Shelly Sapphire was still chasing the ladies around in the 1950s, at MTA and Central respectively. My mother remembers him literally doing so, chasing the secretaries around the office. So, all right, I still stand on what I said, that I'm not writing Oxford history, even though I did leave it out of my doctorate on Bernard Revel, because I was under instructions not to mention it. But when I published with JPS, I could have done what I want, because I lived in Israel, and Bernard Revel Graduate School could not aid me or harm me. So nevertheless, I made the decision. You don't have to tell everything about Torah history. This is, in the long run, unimportant, but what you do tell has to be honest. Okay, one other point also from, and by the way, Nachum Land came up with the commentator articles. Unbelievable, from 1936, Dean Sapphire charged as unfit for office. Student council orders immediate probe of indictments. And here's the text of the resolution. And wow, all I can tell you is when I was growing up, I learned Pirkei Avot, Kol Ma'asecha B'Sefer Nichtavim, Ayin Ro'ah, Ozen Shomat. Who believed it? Rabbi Yaakov, today? Open up the computer, Al Rachel Bitraktana. Everything you did, good or bad, is right there. I couldn't believe it. I told Nachum, he came up. I saw these articles and commentators 70 years ago, 64, and I was doing my doctorate. But here it is, with Neyam Ve'eda. Got it, Yehuda Dov? Be careful what you say, what you write. Boy, be careful. Now, regarding the comic books, Nachum writes to me that the most famous, all the great comic book writers, the inventors of Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, all of them were Jewish. One of the greatest comic book writers was Will Eisner. To this day, the main award of the comics industry is named for him. Eisner's most famous book is a story about Jews living in a tenement in the Bronx based on his own childhood. I grew up in a tenement in the Bronx. Remember I told you, Reb Moshe, last Monday, or was it Sunday, that up in the mountains there was a Koch Alein. One of his stories is called Koch Alein, which is about the people from the building going to a Koch Alein in the Catskills in the summer. That is exactly what I told you in class. Today, when Eliezer goes up to the mountains, he goes to a bungalow, not a Koch Alein. But in those days, he wasn't that wealthy. He couldn't rent a whole bungalow. So you rented a room and the Koch Alein, everyone cooked together, and you had your own little burner. I remember it like yesterday. And that's Reb Moshe's famous tshuva, Yeredeya Tzadi. Okay, now let's come back here. I've caught up on all my emails and we are ready to roll. What we spoke about last week, Veloshin getting started, the family, Reb Yitzchak's son-in-law, the Netziv of the Lashon. He's not yet the Netziv. We're going to get to where he becomes the dominant figure. But the other family member, Rabbi Yoshua Heschel Levin, or Levine, big Talmud Chacham from Vilna, and everything I described, the era, the Batei Medrash, the Rabbanim. And I want to make one point that I didn't stress enough. I don't want you to think that in the 1840s, these new rabbinical schools were not religious. The Tsar would have been very happy had there been a yeshiva university. But you see, a yeshiva university doesn't happen overnight. It took us 200 years in the United States to have the first day school, the first yeshiva katana, 1886, yeshiva, what today developed into yeshiva university. The state of Israel, we have unbelievable chinuch today. What we have developed under very difficult times. We've had war after war after war after terrorist attack. I mean, it's beyond comprehension what we've gone through. And with it all, the chinuch today, the yeshivat chesder, the michlalot, the ulpanot, we've developed a whole new way to teach Torah in the context of modern Israel. And I'll talk about this. I'm going to do a special session on a book that just came out. We'll talk about how this all began, the Anglos and BMT and Whitey Horowitz and the family. I'll announce a date in a week or so you can tell any BMT guys, Makom Gold, that maybe we can open it to men, women, anyone interested. Again, I don't delude myself. Very few people are interested in Torah history. Most people are interested here, now, today. What happened yesterday is of little interest. Perhaps what will be tomorrow, they are concerned with. But it takes time to develop a system that can meet Ahyahadut Poshetet Surah, the Loveshet Surah. In the Rub's Hesped, I believe it was for his Machatenister, for the Tolna Rebbetzin. So the Rub said, our greatest challenge, Torah, is like an old lady in modern times. We have to know how to dress her up properly, make her appealing to modernity. And if you understand that sentence, you understand the Rebbe, you understand the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You follow? HaTorah, Poshetet Surah, Loveshet Surah. And these rabbinic schools, what the Tsar was trying to do with the more enlightened element among the Torah Jews, was to turn out rabbis who could succeed within the modern context that the Tsar was trying to introduce into Russia. Now, the Haraya, that at that point it was totally frum, I don't like to use the word orthodox, but totally observant, the person that the Tsar wanted to be head of it in Vilna was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. That's what I told you, that no one understands why Rabbi Yisrael suddenly left Lithuania, Eastern Europe, to go to Germany. Later he goes to France. But he couldn't say no to the Tsar. It wasn't healthy. So he got out and left the Tsar's dominance. But these rabbinic seminaries began with the best of intentions within the concept of accepting modernity. If you don't want to accept modernity, then you don't want any part of a new education, language, mathematics, geography, history. And you got to remember, most rabbis didn't speak the language of the land. Could you imagine you're growing up in Chicago and you don't speak English? You just speak Yiddish, that's your language. My grandfather grew up in Russia. I couldn't believe it. I said to him once, you came to America, you were 16, 17 years old. How could it be you don't know a word of Russian? All my grandfather taught me in Russian is how to curse. And those curse words came in very handy, Elias. When I did basic training, you know, everyone is cursing the Mafag. I can't go into it now, but you know, I have a copyright on cursing and learning Torah at the same time. Kiyum Talmud Torah. And the Mafakir, Kefet Tamshich. Oh boy. Yipach Rucham Shel Mechashvei Kitzim. Wow. Yehuda Dov, look up the Rambam, Perik Yud Bet, Hilchot Malachim, Halacha Bet, and you'll understand how you can learn Torah and curse at the same time. But all the Russians, I knew all their curses. It came in handily in Riga when I worked for the Mossad, but that's a story unto itself. Let's come back here. So, you see, Reb Yoshua Heschel was, I'll use modern terminology, more enlightened than Vinitziv. And he came into the Lashon, I am the family, I am a direct descendant, I married in the granddaughter of Reb Chaim, it's a direct descendant, I'm her husband, I can learn like anyone else, I'm a big Lamdan, Vilna, and he fought in itself. Now, what I showed you last week was very sad. Here we have memoir literature. Many of the Volushin students later broadened. Some of them became big Zionists. Some of them became maskilim. It doesn't mean that they didn't remain Shomer Torah and Mitzvot, although there was a fall away. But they started writing. And that description of last week is practically an eyewitness. He reached Volushin a little later. But he records everything he heard. And that machloket was bitter. The students took the rein and made fun of the Netziv. I mean, you remember Leslie Velo Yit Bosheshu. Hamiktava, I explained it last week. And they made fun. Borei Maorei Ha'ei. Sheish machloikis, fire in the yeshiva. Now, that could not go on. And let me pick up where I left off. What finally happened, and we have no written record. You'll see later today, we have written record of what happens a few years later. But two famous rabbonim came into the Lashon, visited. And these Rabbanim, I'll mention one of them as a name you all know, Rav David Tevel, the Minsker Rav, the author of the Nachlat David and Baba Kama. Remember when I learned Baba Kama, I think there's also Baba Metzia. Remember the Nachlat David was the main Achron that you used. He already was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Voloshiner. He was an Adam Gadol. The second person was Reb Zalman Zev, and he was the Magid Meshurim of Vilna. Yehuda Dov, do you know what I'm talking about, Magid Meshurim of Vilna? Let me give you a little bit of knowledge. I believe I mentioned this last term, if I'm not mistaken. During the time of the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon was no official Rav in Vilna. He was given a stipend, sit and learn, he was the Vilna Gaon. There was a Rav, Shmuel, there was Machlokes, as usual, who should be the chief rabbi. So in Vilna, they made a takana to avoid Machlokes, there will no longer be a chief rabbi. Yaakov, are you aware of this? It comes down to a tremendous Machlokes. I did postdoctorate research after World War I, Rav Chaim Meiser and Rav Rubinstein, but that's way in the future. There'll be no longer a chief rabbi. If there's no chief rabbi, there's no machlokes. I can give you another example. The Mizrahi in America in the 40s, 50s was a whole argument who should the president be. So the Rav came up with a compromise. You have a presidium. Once you have a presidium, There's no fight. Three people, you can honor three people. They're the presidents. Presidium. Well, this is what, when the Rav came up with this compromise, I don't know how many people realized he was doing what the family did in Vilna. In Vilna, they said, there's no chief rabbi, but we have three dayanim. Now, the most chashuv of the dayanim was the Magid Meisharim. In other words, one dayan, two dayanim, one was an abeitin, one was a dayan in charge of kashrut, shchita, and one was the Magid Meisharim. Magid Meisharim was the one who knew how to speak the best, he could drush it, he had the most public exposure. And Reb Zalman Zev was the Magid Meisharim, so he was the most well-known of the Dayanim in Vilna. Rav Zalman Zev, I believe the last name was Landau, if I'm not mistaken, he and Rav David Tevila came to Volozhin and they brought about a more peaceful atmosphere. Before I go further with Volozhin, I just want to tie this together. This is what the Rav said, and it shakes you up because it's what life is all about. Who was the Magid Meisharim in Vilna 100 years ago? The Rav's uncle, Rabbi Nachum Karakovsky. You've all heard the name Karakovsky. There was a lady who taught French at Stern College. She was a granddaughter-in-law. Rabbi Nachum Karakovsky, an Adam Gadol of Volozhin, of the Avodat HaMelech, his Sefer on the start of the Rambam, Mishnah Torah, the rest of the manuscript was destroyed in World War II, Lo Aleinu. He died about 1929, 1930. In my notes I have exactly the date, but now I'm working by memory. And the Rav's once gave a Sheyur on the efficacy of prayer. I mean, again, efficacy. The Rav taught me that word. You know what it means, Yudadovak, efficacy of prayer? The value of prayer. Can you achieve something? So the Rav said, sometimes when your prayers are not answered, that in itself is the greatest achievement. And the Rav said, I'll never forget this, it's recorded. The Rav said that I prayed so hard, there was a position I wanted, I was getting married, and had God answered my prayers, I would not be alive, my wife would not be alive, my children would not be alive. Well, I can tell you, guessing the past, as I say, when we talk Torah history, we're trying to guess what happened. Generally speaking, I'll say I'm 80% right. This time I'll say 90% right. Penny, he wanted to succeed his uncle as the Magid Meisharim in Vilna. Why Vilna? Vilna, Soloveitchik's. Where was the Rav's wife from? Rebbetzin Tanya. Vilna. He was living in Vilna. At the end, before he got married, he was writing his doctorate. He didn't have to be in Berlin. He moved from Berlin to Vilna. There he got married in Vilna. His first months of marriage were spent in Vilna. And thank God for us, I wouldn't be sitting here. You understand? Had the Rav perished in the Holocaust, and I remember him saying, I would not be alive, my wife would not be alive, my children would not be alive. Kenny, you know why he didn't become Magid Meisharim in Vilna? What do you think? Because his wife's cousin was not happy with the Rav. He went to Berlin and got a doctorate. They were suspicious. You know who his wife's cousin was? Rav Chaim Moisa Grishinsky. Rav Chaim Moisa, by marriage, and the Rav's wife, they both married women who were direct descendants of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Yaakov, you follow me? And his own cousin by marriage, I know this from the family, you're not going to find this published. Not everything has to be published, but I can understand a Paimoise came from the world, Berlin, a doctorate. When I learned in Lakewood, they used to say he could have been the Gadol Hador. But once you go for a doctorate, I remember Freddie Zucker, Zeichus, Chama Lavracha, he's one of my friends in Lakewood. Freddie Zucker, it ruins your mind. You can't think properly. You can't think Torah. You can't think Halacha. And thank God. And that's how the Rebbe winds up in America. Chicago sends him a contract to be the Rosh Yeshiva, gets the non-quota visa, comes to America. Chicago sends the Depression right there, 31, 32, sends to Reb Moshe, we can't pay him a salary, we have to go back on our word, find him a rabbinate on the East Coast. And there was Boston, Korach, with Machloikis, Rabbi Abba Krieger died, I taught some of his descendants. And big machloikis, the usual story with Hashgacha in America, you don't know what the OU did for us. You should kiss the ground of the OU. Should be they have in Hollywood the street with all the stars' names. I see morons bending down and kissing the outside the OU's new headquarters. Should be a stone where you can, all right, if not kiss, at least say Tehillim Hodala Kaddish Baruch Hu. Okay. But that's just Magid Meisharim. Now, what's fascinating is that two Rabbanim came. Eliezer, you learn Choshen Mishpat immediately. I have to ask a simple question. Whoever heard of a Beitin Shena Shaklu? So you see, it's not a Beitin. Your father will explain this. A Beitin has to be, you can make a decision. Acharei Rov. But these two Rabbanim was so well known, Reb David of Tevel of Minsk, the Nachlat David, Talmud Mufak of Reb Chaim Voloshin. Also, he was known as being very worldly, that he knew the score. And the Magid Meisharim of Vilna, so their coming, there was universal acceptance, whatever they will say will be accepted. Now, what they did say, and for the first time there was what we call outside interference in Voloshin, the Netziv did not yet have the aura of the Netziv. It's like the Rav came to Boston in the 30s. I once gave a lecture in Boston in the Young Israel Brookline. And I spoke about the 30s, and I spoke about the difficulty the Rav had. He was not the Rav yet, he was just the young gone from Europe that didn't know anything about America. And there were elderly people came to me and said, how do you know that? We lived it, we saw it. I said, look, my research taught me. It's in YU, in the classroom, that he ultimately blossomed and developed into the Rav. And by the 1950s, people relate to him very differently than they related to him in Boston in the 1930s. Yitz Rubin, Rabbi Rubin, always says he was shocked when he came to Yeshiva University. He said, in Boston, no one stood up for the Rav. There wasn't that aura. And in YU, everyone, 1950s, the Rav walked in, everyone jumped up. The Netziv was not yet the Netziv. He was not a family. These two Rabbanim, they said, Rabbi Yoshua Heschel, it's not his yeshiva. The Netziv is there, the Netziv has a chazaka. The Netziv was appointed by Rabbi Yitzchak. Rav Yeshua Heschel outsider, then its Siv is the Rosh Yeshiva. But to assist him, they appointed a name that played no role before, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Now, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi was a direct descendant of Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim had a daughter. The Rav always spoke about this daughter Relka. She was Reb Chaim's daughter. One time, I remember in a tshuva drasha, the Rav made a mistake, and he referred to Relka as Reb Chaim's wife, and it's Reb Chaim's daughter, not his wife. And there's a printed version of that drasha where Relka is referred to as the wife. I think later it was corrected, or I corrected it in something I wrote, but Relka was the daughter. She was married to Reb Yosef Soloveitchik. Reb Yosef Soloveitchik was basically a businessman. You will always find among the great Rabbonim that they marry off their daughters to great Talmidei Chachamim or to very wealthy individuals. Torah and wealth at many times mixed lekaved uletiferet. So, Rabbi Yosef was not the Gadol Hador by far, was not involved in Volushin. He's a businessman. But he had a son, Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik. Rabbi Yitzchak Zev already was a first-rate Talmud Chacham, but there's something else about him. He was the Shtat Rav, the official rabbi of Kovna, Kaunas. Now you see, we're talking 200 years ago. Do you realize what I just said? Here is a Soloveitchik, Yitzchak Zev, the Brisker Rav's namesake, Brisker Rav named for him. Yitzchak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik, the official rabbi in Kovna. I've just opened up a endless topic. The government insisted that the Rabbanim speak the language of the land. Eliezer Drew's great-great-grandfather knew Shasim Paiskim backwards and forwards. He didn't know one word of Russian. He was in a shtetl. Everyone asked him their shilas, but when the Russian government got involved, and we're talking 200 years ago, they developed the idea, you've heard the expression, a crown rabbi. You know what that meant, the crown rabbi? A rabbi recognized by the crown, by the Tsar, by the king. And in order to be recognized, you had to be a gymnasium graduate, or the equal, you had to know the language of the land. So here we have a Soloveitchik, 200 years ago, a crown rabbi in Kovna. Okay? Think ahead. The Rav inherited some of these genes. When you start saying, the Rav went to college, the Rav went to university, the Rav has secular knowledge. Well, take a look. This is his great-great-grandfather in Kovna, was a crown rabbi. But it seems that fact that he wasn't a crown rabbi, the fact that he was a crown rabbi did not interfere with his acceptance. That in the Volushin aura, the Volushin family, he was a big Talmud Chacham. All right. He knew Russian. He knew some secular knowledge. He was crown rabbi. His son was Rabbi Yosef Dov. Am I on? Okay. His son was Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Beit Halevi. So the Beit Halevi is a great-grandson of Chaim Volushin, a direct descendant through Relka. And he already came to Volushin, as you recall, before his bar mitzvah. His bar mitzvah was in Volushin, and at a very early age, he was an Eloi, he was a Shem Dava, and this is someone raised by a father who was a crown rabbi, and Rav Yosef Dov, very distant from secular studies and a crown rabbi, and Russian language. And he is appointed the assistant Rosh Yeshiva. My dear students, within a few years, a tremendous battle breaks out in the Russian. But this is not a battle from the outside. This is a battle from within with the students. It's not Rabbi Yoshua Heschel Levine coming and suddenly demanding, I should be Rosh Yeshiva. And this is a battle that began right in the Gemara. It continues until today. It's part of human existence. Everything we spoke about with Hashkafa and learning, and the lady who wanted to teach, not go into the family business, the greatness of the human being is his individuality. God created us all different. If you understand this, you will never have difficulty in life being a Rebbe, being a rabbi, being a Rosh Yeshiva, dealing with students. The greatest mistake we can make is to force our opinion, our outlook on our own students' children. Everyone has the right to decide. You all know the sugya in brachot. When you see 10,000 Jews, you have to make a bracha because they're 10,000 people who think differently. No two of us think alike. We can't think alike. If we think alike, we're not humans. We don't have Tzelem Elokim, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. God created one man and everyone is different. You can't create 10 people at a time. Everyone is different. Now, the Gemara in Bracha, Taf Samach Dalet Omer Aleph, I'll quote the Gemara, and this question until today, Shachu Lahatam, they sent the question, Sinai V'Oke Harim, Eze Mehem Kodem. Sinai, Oke Harim, I'll quote. Let me give Art Scroll credit now that I own the magic Art Scroll. And Talmud gave me the most expensive gift I ever got. The Taya Shas, side by side with the English. Wow, what Art Scroll is capable of. The Wasserman edition, you know what I'm talking about. It's what do they call that? A notebook? What's the word they use? Okay, so let's give kavod. Sinai, what does it mean? The great breath of knowledge. That was Rav Yosef and Rabba, who with unusually sharp and analytical, was said to be an uprooter of mountains, an expert in the most exacting analysis of Torah. And they sent to Eretz Yisrael, there was a whole machlokes, Rabbi Yosef and Rabba, Sinai V'Yoke HaHorim, they sent to Eretz Yisrael, who is more important? And they wrote back, Sinai takes precedence, for all are needful of the master of wheat, the one who has gathered many Talmudic traditions. And you can look into the Perushim, but there's no machlokes on this Perush. It is very simple. You can be the greatest bucky in the world. Some people are more attracted to the sharp mind. You can have the sharpest mind in the world. But if you're not bucky in Kol HaTorah Kula, someone will come along and say, Rebbe, you gave this psak, but you're missing this Gemara. You gave this machshava, but you're missing this Medrash Rabbah. So you see, it's a very personal matter. A smart individual, a smart school, have teachers of various types. I remember growing up, no question, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Oke Harim, The Rav Okaharim. Do you ever see the Lubavitcher Rebbe? You ever go to a Fabrangim? Quoted Kol HaTorah Kula, word by word, without any sefer in front of him. Am I right or wrong? The Rav gave shir. He read. Everything was written out. That's why when the Rav took off his glasses, those were magic moments, because he wasn't reading then. He was ad-libbing, telling the story. An einfalt hat him, eingefallen in cup, something fell into his head. He's reminiscing. You follow me, Yaakov? Those moments were golden. These are different people. Kenny, did you know Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein? No, you're overwhelmed. Here's an American kid. Aaron and I would get together and I would say, Aaron, give me the starting lineup. Chicago Cubs, 1945. You, the Dove, that was the last time for many decades that they win the World Series. Aaron was the last person alive who knew the starting lineup. You were the man's bekid, an American kid. He B'nai Kiva. I saw an interview with him. I didn't realize how Gershon Schwimmer, who I taught with so many decades, was his Madrich and B'nai Akiva and had such an influence on him in Chicago. Those were formative years. Aaron's bekid. Kol HaTorah Kula, Hall of Shas, Munach Lefanov, like right in front of him. Okay. The Rav, you know that. The Rav sat here, I sat there, Aaron sat there. The Rav didn't. And he would quote the Gemara, Aaron, Avushtay. And Aaron would shoot back with him on this Baba Kama, Mem Aleph Amid Aleph, Psachim Kuf Bet Amid Aleph. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now what do you like more? It's a very Indo-religic question. But a good school, a good yeshiva, you don't have to worship one individual. Chaim Berlin became one individual. Why you, the greatness of why you, there is so much choice. So many different rebbeim. I don't know, Rav Heschel Schechter, Rav Mordechai Willig, Michael Rosenzweig, each one is a giant. But they're different. They're different. Depends on you. You want to be in a Beitin? You want to be a Posek? You want to know how to deal with Psak? How to deal with Halacha? To deal with Gittin? To deal with Psharit? How I go to Mordechai Willig. Do you want to see real chiddush in this fashion of the Rav? We go to Michael Rosenzweig. It's Talmud more of Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein than the Rav, but he has it. You want to deal with OU, Pshilas, Paskin, Rabbinate? I go to Heshisham, Rabbi Heschel Schechter. Father, Rabbi Melech Schechter. I did Shemesh with him, the Rabbinate. You follow? But the students already learned how to do machlokes. And a tremendous machloket broke out. Who should be the Rosh Yeshiva? See, the Netziv was not yet totally the Netziv. We like Rabbi Yosef Daiv. We like who would become the Beit HaLevi. Okaharim. More important than Sinai. And the sad part is, once they learned how to fight, this was not a fight that was brought into the yeshiva by an outsider coming along, the students within imploded. And they didn't behave properly. And I remember as a kid, when I first learned about the Lashon, the Machlokes, it troubled me. I don't know. I'm very naive. And I believe that if you're a Ben Torah, if you're a Lamdan, you're a Shemayim, have to overflow את גמילת חסד. אלה דברים שאין לכם שיוע. עוד דמו חפרת, קרן קיימת לעולם הבא. I drive, I told you. I enjoy letting people pull in front of me. It's gemilat chesed. I don't know. I feel it's a camp. Never tell anyone off you. Someone, students ask a question, can be a foolish question, turn it into a good question. I remember when I was a real Rebbe in the 60s, in Yeshiva Shel Chanan. Ach, that I love building up a student. But students fight. So what went on in Volozh, and we have many already details there. So Rav Kalinsky wrote a sefer, it's from the Radin family. He wrote a sefer, HaRishon, I think it was called Le Beit Bris, on Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. Stamper quotes it. I've went through it years ago. It's a little bit the safer, there are parts of it that you cannot take that seriously because he records conversations between the Netziv and Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi. So a little bit is embellished, but the fight was real. The Netziv comes in to give shir, and all the Gemaras that he would have in his library were turned like that, you see. Figure out what sefer that is, all you see are the pages. Generally in a library, what do you see? The books with their title. You can imagine, I remember as a kid when I heard this the first time, I was hurt. How could Talmidim act this way, Gedolei Yisrael? Worse things happen. I don't want to repeat. But Talmidim of the Beit HaLevi, Talmidim of the Netziv, tremendous battle. Now,
was any of this carry over from the previous fight?
Well, they learned from the previous fight. There's no two ways about it, that because they could act so disdainful what we spoke about last week, this carried over to this Nuchama. One point I want to make, and everyone reaches this conclusion, the relationship between the Netziv and the Beit HaLevi remained good. It didn't have lasting impact on the greater Volozhin family. The proof of the matter is that the Netziv's granddaughter married the Beit HaLevi's son. So, that says something. But the machloikis was real. Now, how do you solve it? How do you solve it? And here, we have the full document, and I'm going to come back to a sefer I introduced a few weeks ago. Most of Torah Be'erapa B'vinyanim U'B'churbanam, edited by Shmuel Talman Mirsky, my professor in graduate school, rabbi of the Young Israel of Borough Park. Those of you whose wives went to Stern, his son, David Mirsky, a wonderful Jew, was dean at Stern College for many years, professor of English literature, and I believe he's one of the deans. He didn't have a long life. He has children who are, there's one son who lives in Israel, who wrote a brilliant doctorate on Ralph Cook, a very capable family. Now, the battle in Volozhin was very strong, and it had to be solved. They decided to follow the example of what we spoke about a half hour ago, an hour ago, calling in Rabbanim. Except this time, instead of two, they called in four. Once again, you see, it's a Beit Sheinu Shakul, which means that these were four Gedolei Yisrael whose prestige was such that 99% of the students would accept whatever decision was made. Who were the four Rabbanim? First of all, they called in Reb David Tevler again from Minsk. He was accepted by everybody. They called in Reb Zev, the Maggid from Vilna. He too was accepted by everybody. In addition, they called in the Slutsker Rav, Yav Yosef Baima, who was a chaver of Reb David Tevel and also a Talmud of Reb Chaim Voloshin. The most important one for us, where are we sitting? We're sitting in a campus, the kid from the Bronx with miracles got from a billionaire named Joe Gruss, the kid from the Bronx, Arnie Rothkopf / Aaron Rakefet. What building is this today? Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, the Jerusalem branch. Who they call in is the fourth Borer will say, Reb Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. Now, Reb Yitzchak Elchanan at this time was not that well known. He was not yet in Kovna. He was Rav in the Vardak. But they say that the psak that the four Rabbanim gave, he was the one that engineered it, that advocated it, that worked it out, and got everyone to accept it. And Yossi, it made Reb Yitzchak Elchanan very famous. And when Kovna, Kaunas, which second to Vilna, but Kovna still had a chief rabbi, and I descend from both cities. My mother's father always would say to me, Gedenks, my Azad is from Vilna, and my mother's mother was from Kovna. And Yehuda Dov, that's how I am related to Rabbi Dov Revel. Could you imagine? I share part of my blood is the same blood as Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel from Kovna, the Kovna family. That's Kalvariski. That's my grandmother's family. So Kovna needed a chief rabbi. They needed a chief rabbi who could deal with Zionists, Maskilim, religious Jews, irreligious Jews. The Psak of Voloshin put Reb Yitzchak Elchanan on the map. He knows how to arbitrate. He knows how to make a decision that will be acceptable to almost all. Okay? And comes famous. Now, in Shmuel Kalman Mirsky's book on page 40, the Psak is recorded word by word. So I'll give you the highlights of the Psak. First of all, peace has to come to the yeshiva. The discreet, indiscreet behavior cannot continue. For B'nai Torah, I only wish here in Israel they would listen, because we suffer from the fallout. All of you know what went on in Panovich for many years. It's now quiet already, but I mean, could you believe that they beat up a Rosh Yeshiva from Panovich, needed to be hospitalized, Rabbi Berman? Could you believe they threw containers of gil, of sour cream, I don't know what you call it, yogurt, gil, I don't know, it's a famous Israeli product, I don't know whether it's sour cream or yogurt, some expert can correct me and inform me, but they threw it around, it's in a base medrash. Yes. The first psak, no indiscreet behavior in the yeshiva. All the Rebbeim have to be respected. Torah has to be respected. Kibbut Aviyim, the Rebbe always said this, Kibbut Aviyim shows a continuation of Maimon HaSinai, of belief in God, in belief that there was a Torah given, continuity. When you respect your parents, it means you respect the past. You respect your Rebbeim, it means you understand there's a Torah Shabbat, there's continuity, there's generation to generation. Wherein do we differ than Reform, Conservative, and all that happened in Israel with Mapai and Mapam? Continuity. No behavior that is a disgrace to the yeshiva. Any student sheyizalzel b'kaved echad me'rabbonim, they absolutely have the right to dismiss him, throw him out. Talmidim of the yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva is Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. The Netziv has Chazaka. He was here before. He was appointed by Rav Yitzchak. The Beit HaLevi is the Skan Rosh Yeshiva, the assistant. When it comes to accepting Talmidim, the Netziv is the ultimate authority. He is the ultimate boss. The only time that Rav Yosef Dov can accept Talmidim on his own is when it is a Talmid coming with a letter of recommendation addressed to Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi. See? Acceptance of Talmidim. Who's the boss? The Netziv. It's his yeshiva. He's the Rosh Yeshiva. Avol kashe yevo mechtav miyuchad la Rav HaGoyin malatu kvod ha-Rab Yosef Dov Ber reshut biyodo lekabel bi'atzmo. But essentially, it's the Netziv. Another part of the psak. No shayurim are conducted in private homes. Remember what went on with the Yeshua Heschel? He started teaching and davening in his home and students went there? No. It's a yeshiva. It's a yeshiva building. Everything has to go on in the yeshiva per se. Even when students want to consult the Netziv or the Beit HaLevi, Yeyebe Metifta V'lo Beveitam Shel HaRabbanim Hanau Kviyot HaTfila Shel Bnei HaYeshiva Tihiye Davka Beveit HaUlpana. So you see, a focal institution. This is not something you're going to break off from. You're going to go your way. No. There's a central institution. That's where it's at. That's where the shurim are at. That's where you daven. That's where you consult with your Rebbe. Now, the rest of the decision is about the money. And here you can see what was involved in fundraising. The Mishulachim, some of them became very powerful. Imagine you're a Mishulach, Yosef, and you bring in $1 million. Well, you bring in $1 million, you have a say in the yeshiva. It was stipulated no Mishulach can be fired by one or the other Rashi Yeshiva there has to be agreement. Agreement if whatever, they're unhappy with the Meshulach. What the Rabbanim wanted was that there shouldn't be a situation where the Netziv likes his Meshulachim because they bring in heavy money and have a say that will support him. And Rabbi Yosef dove bare. Later, the Beit HaLevi, that he'll bring in his Meshulachim. No, they have to work together. The same thing with the money coming in. This is all described in great detail, that when money comes in, they immediately have to bring it to either the Beit HaLevi or to the Netziv, but one has to tell the other. And the money is recorded. There has to be, they call it a register. That's the word they use. Register. Transliterated into Hebrew, Yiddish. Everything has to be recorded. What's amazing here is that it has to be put into the yeshiva safe, and just sitting, the safe has to have two locks. Each Rosh Yeshiva gets one key. In other words, to take out the money, the Netziv and Rabbi Yosef Dov, the Beit HaLevi, or Rabbi Yosef Dov, call them what you wish, they have to open it together. And students, you can't, the Netziv is the ultimate authority. Just as he's the ultimate authority in accepting students, if a student acts disrespectfully, he has the right to throw the student out, and the Beit HaLevi cannot interfere. Well, the Pesach goes on and on, there are monetary details, how much each one has to get a month, and other members of the family, there's a whole possessions, library, personal possessions, everything returned to the yeshiva, you pay, settle it, but what comes out of it is the Beit HaLevi is the second in command. He continues in the yeshiva, but the Netziv has the chazakah, and the Netziv is the ultimate and basically the only authority in the yeshiva. And this psak, before they issued it, all the students had to sign that they were going to accept whatever the psak is. If they refused to sign, they were kicked out. I don't know if there's a record, if anyone refused, maybe one, two, three, but this was the psak 100%. Let me just make one more point and I'll open it. The Beit HaLevi remained, and a year or two later, the Rabbinate of Slutsk opened, and the Beit HaLevi went on to Slutsk. From Slutsk, he later goes on to succeed Rabbi Diskin in Brisk, and that's how the Soloveitchik family gets to Brisk. Why the Beit HaLevi left, people have guessed. I think the framework is very simple. He recognized the Netziv was now becoming the Netziv. The Netziv was the dominant personality. Slutsk was a famous rabbinate. There he would be the sole individual. He felt it was healthier for him, better for him, more of a challenge. He went on to Slutsk. I come back to what I said a few minutes ago. It was not hard feeling. It's not that there was mistreatment. Chas v'chalila. The families remain close, and later they intermarry. I mean, you can't get any closer then marrying the Netziv's granddaughter becomes the wife of your son. And now the Lashon and Netziv slowly but surely become one and the same. Yes, Yehuda Dov. First of all, it wasn't for them to make the agreement. The students had reached the point where each one was holding up their flag, their Rebbe, this is the yeshiva. If they would try to make an agreement among themselves, it would leave hard feeling on all sides. When you call in Gedolei, Gedolei Yisrael, and you have to sign whatever they will agree, and they're totally objective, and they investigate and interview students. This plaque wasn't made overnight. Everyone got their chance to speak, to say what's on their mind, their thinking, their heartthrob. And this is the psak, Gedolei Yisrael. It was accepted.
They
could have talked to the students. The students of the Netziv would say, fine, we'll accept what the Netziv says, not the Beit HaLevi.
Netziv couldn't tell them to respect the Beit HaLevi?
Because you're looking at it today, 200 years later, or 170 years later, and to you, these names, the Netziv, the Beit HaLevi, couldn't work it out. Come back to Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chai in Berlin. You know how much bloodshed went on there? Rabbi Snow left. Rabbi Avigdor Miller left. Rabbi Shlomo Karbach left, his cousin, not the singer, but the Baal Machshava. Rabbi Hutner, focal figure, ultimately only figure. You follow? Listen, it's personality, it's students. Outsiders can come in and they can bring peace. YU was shaking. What became YU in the 1900s over secular study? You don't know what went on there. The students wanted a high school. The Balabatim said, these are Balabatim who made good in New York. The Balabatim said, we speak a good enough English. We have lots of money. What the hell do you need a high school? We're giving money Mizelzitzin and Lernin Taylor. Nish gains a high school. Do you understand me or not? What went on? Two, finally, they agreed to bring in Rabbi Revel. And don't think it was easy for him. He had to make a high school, he had to organize the rabbinic department. But you see, Rabbi Revel did something. He brought in the Mecha to Eloy. That shows you. Didn't have to be self-centered. He brought in a Weltgaum to be the Rebbe. And once the Mecha that came to America, Shlomo Palachik, Gesundheit, once he came, you never had a moment in America where they wouldn't Gedolei Yisrael. He took ill. It's very sad what the Mecha died from at the age of 55. Today they cure with one shot of antibiotics. I had that. I had the same thing, osteomyelitis. Had in the 60s. I still remember Springfield Avenue. I remember the doctor, Dr. Kansius. And once the Soloveitchiks came, every Torah Vedas, how to get a top name to teach, because otherwise students are going to go with it. Better rabbinians, but there's room. You can choose. The beauty of YU is there's different rabbinim, freedom of choice. Most Talmidim love the Rav. There are many Talmidim who wouldn't leave Rav David Lifshitz, the Tzudaka. He was much warmer than the Rav. He lived across the street from the yeshiva. His home was open to the Talmud. You understand what I'm saying? There's plenty of choice involved. And YU was good on that level. It was perfect. wise guys like me, we forced the Rav to give us a share. Imagine the chutzpah, read Washington. I tell you the story, how the famous Sanhedrin shear that everyone talks about, how it began. Bunch of wise guys. I'd smack my face today. Chutzpah. We know how to learn better than anyone. We just need the Rav. We can't learn like the Rav. He has to be our teacher. I mean, that was essentially what... And we had a miracle that the Rav fell for it. That Dr. Belkin pushed him. It was a mamash miracle. Mamash miracle. But there were other students, Rav Dovid Lipschitz. There was Rav Moshe Aaron Pulev. I mean, you don't know what a this kind of an individual he was. He wanted brisk. Rav Yeruchim Gorelick, Rav Noach Bornstein. Oh boy. See, that was the greatness of YU. In my case, it worked against me because that's what got me involved in Jewish history. Because someone asked me yesterday, how was the, what did you do? I said, I just gave a shiur. How was it? I say, then I invited a guy. There's one person in this building who's been here 3 years. I've pleaded with him for 3 years. Now come and hear me teach. No, he's too busy. I said, tomorrow I'm giving a lecture. Wait a minute. Sunday you gave a shiur, tomorrow? Sure. Yesterday was Yeshiva's Chonot, Shas, Pais, right or wrong? You heard the shiur yesterday. Today, Bernard Revel Graduate School. How did I get involved in Bernard Revel Graduate School? Because I had so many different rebbeim, and behind the scenes, they poked fun at the other ones. Ich can learn. Say, what's Kenan say? You don't understand the policy. So I had to find out. You see, I had no parental guidance. And I had to find out, why does Brisk push Mir aside? Why does Mir push Rock aside? Why does Tells push them all aside? And boy, if God will give me another 20 years of teaching, may need more, you'll have your answers. But the notes are all prepared. The problem is that from the notes to be able to lecture, you have to have the background, the mind that puts it together. Good question, but that's the answer. But they brought in Rabbi David Tells, the Nachlat David. They brought in Rabbi Yosef Slutska. Yosef Boimel, the Magid Mesharim of Vilna, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector Nevadik Rav. Oh boy. And you got to remember again what I said. The Netziv was not the Netziv, and the Beit HaLevi was not yet the Beit HaLevi. You read me, you understand what I'm saying. People, you study what the Rav in Boston, what went on with Birchat Kohanim. Could that go on in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s? Absolutely not. In the 30s, you know what I'm talking about, Jacob? The Rav, you know, he told the story time and again. He comes into the shul, Shabbos, Yontif, no Birchat Kohanim. The Rav says, you have to have Birchat Kohanim. Well, Balabatim met Saturday night, and said the Rav cannot be daven in there, because he was the Rav of the Chevra Shas. It was many shuls. It wasn't the concept of a Rav of a shul like we have today. He was, and they said the Rav is a Machal of Shabbos. Birchat Kohanim in Shabbos is Chilul Shabbos. No, could you picture in the 50s, the 60s, they would say that to the Rav? I remember, let me tell you a story, it just fell into my head, according to the Masham's grandson. It's Nevuah that I just got, Gilui Shechina. Let me tell you a story. The Rebbetzin's, Rebbetzin Tanya's sister married Professor Lisman, who was a mathematics professor at the yeshiva. I believe the Rav was involved in making the shidduch. So their son became bar mitzvah. They lived in the Bronx, Mount Eden area. This was the heart of the Bronx, heart of Yiddishkeit, when I was growing up. and the famous big modern Orthodox shul, Rabbi David Hollander. You've heard the name Yehuda Dov, make believe you did for the evil press for the wise. The brother-in-law of Rabbi Moshe Scherer was married to the Rav of Far Rockaway. They were married to daughters, fabulous ladies. And Rabbi Hollander's shul. And that Shabbat there was another bar mitzvah. So you had two bar mitzvah boys. And the other bar mitzvah had been arranged long before the Soloveitchik, the Listman bar mitzvah. Everyone knew the Rav was spending Shabbos in the Bronx. Some mob scene at the shul. We all walked there to daven. Bit of a walk. I davened in Arthur Avenue. Was 5 minutes from my house. This already was 20 minutes, 18 minutes. And now what do you do? Two bar mitzvah boys. So what the Rav did, took us, young men, come outside with me. We'll stand outside. I had a minyan outside. We didn't hear the Haftorah. The first bar mitzvah boy read the Haftorah. Maftir Haftorah. We didn't hear it. The Rav called us in. We now have to hear it. Both bar mitzvah boys read, you follow me? Read the Maftir Haftorah. No problem. So I remember a balabas there. Rabbi Savitz was there. You know who I'm talking about? Rabbi David Savitz, originally from Boston. His father was a sheikh. He was the mankal of Salanta Yeshiva, Tsar Academy today, which bears very little resemblance to Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yisrael Salanta. And I remember an elder of Balabas says to Rabbi Savitz, what's happening here? What you had from a Zazak? Who heard of such a thing? Dad at the, this one reads the Maftir, this one reads the Haftorah. And Rabbi Savitz says, Macha Shvayt, you be silent, don't you dare ask. That's Rav Soloveitchik there, the greatest rabbi alive. If he does this, this is perfect. Absolute right. Minfretnish kein shailas. Follow? And that's your mistake. That's in the 50s. The Rav was the Rav. The 1930s? That's a meshuga. Tzvei haftedes? Tzvei modaf min zitzen da in heren? What was this with them? Who can translate that? Get the feeling? What, are you crazy? Two Haftorahs? Who is this Rabbi Soloveitchik? What does he know? We never saw anything like this. This was the psak. Gentlemen, once the Beit HaLevi left, the Nitziv is the Nitziv. A golden chapter begins in the yeshiva's history. He needed an assistant. Running the yeshiva with only one Rosh Yeshiva was impossible. So there were members of the Fried family. They assisted him, but his real assistant came when Rev. Paul Shapiro married the Nitziv's daughter. We're talking about 1870 now. And he became the Skan Rosh Yeshiva. He'd be there for over a decade. He later left the yeshiva to accept the rabbinate so that his son-in-law could become the assistant to the Nitziv. David, who was his son-in-law? Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. You follow? And this is the relation that everyone knows about. The machlokot are behind us, although there's going to be a terrible machlokot by the end of the 1880s, which brings the yeshiva down. But these were the golden years. Now, who is Reb Rafal? Reb Rafal Shapiro, the greatest matmid you can imagine. Belushin learning, it's nothing else in life mattered. And I end off the class with the famous story that I first heard from the Rav. When the Rav was talking about sein Elter Zeide, his great-grandfather, Reb Rafal Shapiro, Reb Chaim's father-in-law, and he tells the following story. He says, Reb Rafal, et noga lichten learning, his whole life was learning, never got up from the sefer, never got up from his bench, and his wife comes to him in the Beis Medrash, in the Lashon, in front of the Talmidim, and says, Rafael, Kumahem, I'm living it in Yiddish, so let me say it in Yiddish first. Kumahem, Yedav sich anton de Shabbos Kleider, in noch asher macht mit Chassana von unser Techter. Come home, close your, change your clothes, put on your Shabbos clothes. In another hour, our daughter is getting married. And Reb Rafal gets up and he turns to the Talmidim and says, Oy, my tired Talmidim, first haste, tsa gidul panim. This is tsa gidul panim. I have to get up and imagine his wife made the shidduch, his wife made the engagement, his wife prepared the wedding. An hour before the wedding, she's reminding Reb Rafal that he has to go home and change his clothes and put on his Shabbos clothes. Our daughter is getting married. And this was the Rav's great-grandfather. This is Reb Rafal. This is the Netziv's son-in-law. This is the Lashon, the golden, golden period. We have a lot more to do. I have a Talmud listening in Florida, Beryl Phillips, and when I first mentioned the Netziv, if you sure, he writes to me, Rebbe, that's all you're going to talk about the Netziv? You're not doing him justice. I said, Beryl, savlanut, gedul, patience, whatever language you speak, we're going to get there. What shlav shlav, stage by stage. And Yomo, you're going to get your head chopped off. But we have to get there. It deals with yesterday's shir that I told you, Tyson, with the Netziv. But we got to get there in context. So my dear students, first of all, are there any questions from the erudite people sitting in front of me? Some of our Talmidim who generally come are down at the Dead Sea today enjoying life. I wish them well. No questions, so what did, let me read it. So what did we do? Yes, David.
I wanted to ask, in light of the machloket or the split, I understand, between the Beit HaLevi and
Well, there wasn't a split, you see. It's not like what happened, the bitter fight a few years earlier. That was a fight outside the yeshiva. An outsider came in and said, I'm the boss, I want to modernize, I have what to give you, and students split. Some left as a result of the machloket and followed him to his next rabbinate, to his Talmidim, went on to the Crown School in Vilna, Zhytomyr.
What would you say that the Beit HaLevi's greatest contribution to Lavozhin was?
Well, he brought in the Harifot. The Netziv had unbelievable bekiyot, tremendous insight. And Itziv was a world personality who understood what's going on beyond the Dalet Amot of the yeshiva, as we will see. We have a world to do yet. But the Beit HaLevi brought in that sharpness that Reb Chaim developed to its final edition, brisk. Okay? And this paved the way for the ultimate machlokes, Reb Chaim Berlin or Reb Chaim Brisk.
Do they remain on good terms?
Oh, no. They remained on good terms. These were Gedolei Israel. That's what I stressed. The machlokes began from within. The students have a right to say, I like Reb David Lifshitz. Doesn't mean that Reb David Lifshitz didn't get along with the Rav. Now, it's inevitable in a machlokes there will be areas that hurt. Students, what went on with Reb Heschel Levine and what went on with the machlokes within the Netziv Beit HaLevi, turning around Gemaras, I don't want to go further, but they took... On top of the Netziv's Gemara, they put something that looked terrible. And that was done to frighten him. And that's not the way B'nai Torah should act. But when the psak was given, that's it. The Netziv is the boss. Four Gedolei Yisrael exclaimed, he's the boss. Unanimous. The yeshiva functioned al mei menuchat. And the Netziv, with every passing day, became more famous. He became not Reb Heschel Leib, but he became the Netziv of the Lashon. It's like I say about the Rav. You know what they called him in the early years at YU? I don't want to repeat it. I can't because I'm a Talmud. They called him by his initials, like they called him in Lakewood when I learned in Lakewood. By the end of the 40s, he was the Rav. That's the way you have to understand it. So we saw what the machlekes was about, the Gemara, Sina, the Yakaharim. This is a machlekes that goes on until today. But today, if you're a smart individual, see, with a Chassidic Rebbe, you have no choice. There has to be one Rebbe, one focal figure. In a yeshiva, you can have it open. Many, many, many different figures. Each one has what to contribute. Choose. Choice. Habechira nitna. No one can force you. Ein adam lo meid ela masha libo rotzen lumod. What you want to learn. Okay. By the way, in Ger, there's a split today. Part of that split is exactly to a certain degree, b'kiyat rotz okar harim. Reb Shol is a different personality. He's mechadesh. He's sharp, he's clear. To a certain degree, he's more Litvish than he is Hasidic. You understand, it's Reb Shol. Okay, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for honoring me. We had an honored guest. Are you visiting here today?
Yeah.
When are you going to settle and become a Jew? Any children here?
I have a married son from my first angel.
Here?
Yes, at a granddaughter.
But I hope he's not near and they all go back. I need someone that will stay. We need, but I got bad news for you. If you don't listen to the clarion call, the Shofar Gadol, the Goyim are doing their best to remind you to get out and go back. And Bernie Sanders is doing his best. The Menuvel Amishumad. Yoma, open it up to the world. Charlie, Charlie, good to see you. Did you know, lo aleinu, the latest Karban from Rehovot?
I didn't know it, no.
No, because I said a vod yesterday that already people repeated. I said, Nebuch, those three boys represent what's happening here. One was from Shlomi, one from Rehovot, and one from Yitzpah Rimon. It's the whole country of Israel. Jack, did you ever figure out who that picture is?
I don't know who he is, but my wife knows a lot. She knows him. Yeah, she knows who he is.
Did she tell you who he is?
What?
Did she tell you who he is? His last. You know what his last name really is?
What?
Klein.
What's his last name?
Klein. It's Rabbanash's son. Gertner is his mother's maiden name.
Boy. Moshe Klein's son. Okay.
And that's the guy you were sitting next to in Shul. And he's a very prominent rabbi. Not rabbi, doctor, expert, looked up to, revered in the Midwest.
The clothing he wore when I knew, not liking the picture.
Okay, Baruch Hashem. All right, see, check with Etty if that's who she thought it was. All right, are there any questions from around the world? Mark, you're still awake, Mark and Mark. All right, Chicago, it's easier. It's
I'm
in
awake.
Awake or asleep? No, in Flatbush. What's going on? Very quiet. I think I woke him up. But Mark...
No, I'm awake, I'm awake.
Awake? Okay, good to see you. And Mark is smiling. He's wide awake. Mark, I answered all your questions.
Once an hour early, but he has the right to be awake.
I have the right. Okay. Until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you so much for honoring me by being on the screen. Das Vedanya. Okay.